Nice. Perfect. Three, two, one, go. Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Odilon Alexander Ngu. Today we're going to be having a conversation with my friend Tahuti. Tahuti is an author, and he wrote a great book titled Long Live the King, as you can see with his background. So I'm very excited to go into the book today and hear what Tahuti has to say and learn more about the book and sort of what Tahuti's goals were when he decided to write this book. So Tahuti, how you doing, bro?
Yeah, fantastic, bro. Happy to be happy to have this finally have this conversation. I mean, it's long overdue. Finally got this conversation going,
Nice, nice, man. So let's just catch up. How have you been? Like, what have you been up to since we last spoke?
So again, obviously we released the book this year. So May 2022, the book got released, and obviously what I've decided really I wanted to so release the book now. What we're doing right now is really working on the music right now. It's really what I've been up to, really dealing with the music. I really want to go above and beyond and really go to the next level. So for me, I want to pr produce a 30-minute symphony piece that will complement the book, and also later down the line, even go for the film and be the first man really to do all three. So I really want to, I'm really excited for it,
Wow. So let me get this clear. So you said you're gonna create a symphony that is gonna accompany the book, sort of to give you a different perspective, or give the audience a different perspective of the book.
That's correct. So the symphony will give it essentially capture the emotion of the book within the instruments and the strings, and definitely,
Wow, that's interesting. So would you call this the polymathic approach, where you're like using different mediums to express sort of the same theme?
To an extent, you could go that route. Yeah, definitely to an extent, you could say that.
Wow, I'm excited. Yeah, I saw you playing with the piano that you just got on Instagram, and I was like, wow, this guy's going to his next level. I love it, man. It's exciting.
Appreciate it.
Hell yeah. So give us a like brief background about the book and what was the motivation? Like, what made you decide to say, hey, you know what, I'm gonna write this 300 page book.
So really, in 2020 is really where it all began for me. So 2020, it started with an idea. And what I have to talk about, obviously I've been doing research for many years, different things, and I often spoke about how the deeper I go into this research, the deeper I go into this knowledge, really, the more science fiction it becomes. So really there were so many ideas that needed to be explored, and the platform that I've been using for the many years to explore ideas, I feel like this is not enough. Something needs to be really documented here, and this is really where it all began.
So I experienced you initially from YouTube, where I saw you did a bunch of videos and you were covering a lot of interesting topics that I found interesting. And you felt as though that medium wasn't enough to convey the message. So you're looking to convey that same message with as many different mediums as possible, whether it's music, whether it's through writing, et cetera, et cetera. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's correct. So really, I want to explore different media outlets now to really convey the same message, but on a deeper level, and touch people on many different levels, but really also to show the world really how far really creativity can extend. Because some people think, well, if you can write a creative writing and produce a story, why not compose music? Why not produce the film? So really, I want to explore outlets to show the world that really we can, there's so much more to this,
Yeah, wow, interesting. Okay. Yeah, so tell us about Long Live the King.
Yeah, so really, originally the title of the book was, it was a project. So whenever I write, different projects, I always capture them under a particular project. So the project was originally called The King Is Not Dead. And really, again, essentially, the king is not dead because, again, I'm doing all this research, and really, essentially, it's shown to me that, well, the king, he can't be dead, based on the research I'm conducting. So it was The King Is Not Dead. And over time, as I started dealing with my artists, and for the cover, I came to the conclusion, Long Live the King. This is a name that suits really the book.
Long live the king. Okay, great. So give us a quick background on the setting. Like, what era is this sort of this book set in?
Well, the era essentially, obviously we're based in Africa. We're based in Africa, but
Africa?
the
Okay.
era
What part of
now,
Africa?
so towards East
Africa.
Africa,
Okay.
mainly East Africa. And really the era, again, it's not really modern. It's not really, we're not really modern Africa, but really you know, a distant past, a distant time, a distant time of place.
But, ancient Africa, basically.
You know, yeah, so to an extent, yeah.
Okay. So talk to us also about the characters, the main characters.
So the main character in the book, the main is we follow the story of young King Tutankhamun. Mm-hmm. And King Tutankhamun, again, is the young boy that takes the throne. And then obviously his father is King Aten. And then we have a few characters, obviously the lead scientist. Then we have a few more other characters. He's essentially mentor and guide. And then, yeah, and a few other characters and stuff, yeah.
Okay. So just when I was going through the book, I noticed there was some similarities between King Tutankhamun and King Tut. Was that intentional or was that coincidental?
Well, you know, we're not saying that we didn't draw inspiration from certain aspects, you know. Oh, you know, inspiration has been drawn from particular aspects, but I can't necessarily say, obviously with the disclaimer, you know, characters and events can't be, you know, are not to be linked to real events and people, but we're not saying that certain similarities and certain, you know, inspiration wasn't drawn from, you know, different things.
You know, one thing that I really enjoyed though, I enjoyed the fact that it felt like an ancient setting, but also futuristic at the same time. You seem to like sort of, you know, bring together the idea of like a utopian society and an ancient society. Talk about that.
Yeah, so for me, again, it was essential for me because obviously I really wanted to essentially, because obviously in the first chapter, we talk about how essentially Temek, which is a society in the book Temek, essentially is a society where if achieving 100% efficiency is the goal, then that society would have been the closest to have achieved it. You see, so we're showing how we're blurring the lines technologically, but also showing just living with nature, living on the land and just, you know, essentially natural living, nature living, you know?
Yeah, yeah. So that's interesting. So when you say nature and efficiency, you know me, that piques my interest. So right. When you say, you know, using nature as a benchmark for efficiency, how is that done in this society? Are they replicating nature in the way they develop their systems?
Yeah, so essentially in the book, obviously, and in the society, their nature is their essentially standpoint or a point of which of, you know, trying to reach 100% efficiency, like how nature is 100% efficient. Mm-hmm. And it's trying to achieve this. So again, it's like, for example, in my book, we talk about how cells are like cities and how they build their cities, like how cells are with the nucleus. And there was that conversation between, you know, King Aten and Tama, he talks about how he is the nuclei and is the nucleus of the kingdom and the cell wall and the cities. And they compare it to the cities because cells are like cities. And so essentially that civilization, that society is basically living on the principle of nature and trying to be 100% efficient and reach 100% efficiency that nature is.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. So you also talked about the economy of, of Temek. Talk about that a little bit more. I'm interested.
Yeah, so we were just basically trying to finalize and say, well, how would economics would have ran in that, you know, during that, in that society? And essentially, I give a brief example of, you know, give a man a fish, he eats for a day, teach him how to fish, he eats for a lifetime. Essentially, no one was without skill because really economy for me, it's the work, it's the labor. The paper is just the fiat currency, but it's the work and it's the labor and it's the workforce that essentially keeps it moving. So if everybody has skill, everybody has something to work with, everybody has something to do, then that's the economy in itself. And that's really this economy of Temek.
How is that delegated? You know, how do you know what your role is in that society? Is it something that you're born into, or is it something that is the hierarchy sort of, you know, do you have to work to attain certain things in this society?
That's a good question. So
is it a meritocracy? Is it a meritocracy, or is it something that you're born into a certain like section of that society, and then you have certain roles you have to live by?
Yeah, so good question. So the king, obviously, that's the bloodline. That's the blood. So the king, that's based on the bloodlines, but really, it's really just trade skills. And I guess, so if you come from a family of blacksmiths, you're a blacksmith. That doesn't mean you can't do other things, but you come from that family. So you're a blacksmith, come from a tailor family of making garments, and you're a tailor, and so on and so forth, family business, and so on and so forth. Yeah.
Okay. Okay. That's good. That's a nice setup. One thing about King Tut and King Tamet is the fact that they both have something wrong with them, some sort of ailment. you talk about that? Because I found that very interesting. This seems to be a theme in a lot of you know, historical books about kings and them having some sort of ailment that they have to sort of reconcile.
Yeah, so for me, because of based on, again, so the plot of the book, or for me, the main reason why I wrote the book was The Secret of All Secrets. And we can, you know, we can touch on that a bit later, but The Secret of All Secrets. And because of the nature of The Secret of All Secrets and what they were dealing with, I needed a way to essentially phase into that. And him having a disability in his foot was the perfect, whether, you know, whether there's, you know, similarities and things like that, that was perfect for me to segue into The Secret of All Secrets. So it was a perfect setup. It was a perfect setup.
Great. Yeah, and I wrote down a question here. So he said that the king did not feel special, and he had to essentially, you know, use his friend group to reassure him that, hey, you might have ailments, but you're still the king because of your bloodline.
Yeah, so obviously that was part of the emotion as well. You know, he felt as if, you know, okay, he doesn't feel, you know, because he's got this feeling in his foot, he can't really, you know, run and climb and play with his friends. Uh-huh. And again, and that was really that emotional anchor to why is he the youngest to undergo the process? So, and again, we talk about that, but that was why, because that emotional anchor, because of this constant, while seeing his friends go through all this and he can't. So that was really the emotional anchor to tie into that Secret of All Secrets.
Okay. Great. And I also, you mentioned that the language and that they use in this society was symbolic pictographic language. Talk about that. That's interesting.
Yeah. So for me, again, the language, again, essentially, they had if a society is so advanced, then their language would have to be advanced. You know, language is how we communicate. Language is how we convey ideas. Language is how we, you know, essentially convey these messages and these different things. So the language would have to have been on a high, on a different level. So I'm pondering how essentially this society had a language was actually really was a computational language. And this language is more than something to be read, but could actually be read by a computer. And a computer could interface with that. Like, like even today they have something called natural language processing. And this is what they want to teach AI now, natural language processing. So we can actually build these bots that can translate for us. So you should be able to speak into your phone with zero latency and it will speak in Chinese, Mandarin, right? And again, but in order to do that, we need natural language processing. So I said, okay, so this society had that, right? This society based on my book would have had that. And that pictographic language was a form of that.
Okay. So what's the secret of all secrets?
You know, so the secret of all secrets, it's a very complicated thing. And then, you know, and I was really hoping that essentially, you know, I was given a few seeds here and there and hoping that people would essentially, you know, grasp the idea of it and essentially understand it. So really what The Secret of All Secrets essentially is, again, it's in the name, Long Live the King. And even the cover, as you can see behind me, again, it's in the cover art. So essentially we see a man, you know, emerging almost. So from your perspective, what do you see when you see my cover art? What do you see when you see
it? What do I see? Okay, let me see here. So I see he's emerging out of the soil, and he's leaning to the side, on his right side, and I see a serpent or something of that nature wrapped around him.
All right.
I want to make your screen bigger so I could see it better. And there's something on his head. It looks like there's something on his head. So is there a significance to the leaning? Why is he leaning? It looks like he's asleep or something. Is there a reason?
So essentially for me, when I was dealing with my artist and we were in so many renditions, I had to send my artist a picture of myself in. So that exact position that you see on your screen, that's the exact positioning that I sent to my artist as me taking a picture of myself, and that's the exact positioning. So essentially what The Secret of All Secrets is essentially, so we talk about, you know, the germensing. I've often talked about the germensing of a plant. So essentially it's the germensing of a man as if it was a plant, you see. And there's so many levels to it, because again, on the left-hand side, we see the open mouth. Now, a lot of people, they put the full synopsis in the back of their book. For me, it's just the open mouth. And this open mouth encapsulates the entire process. Because, so to the reader, it's the consciousness transmigration, right? You know, it's the consciousness transmigration. But really, to the people of this society, well, we take this king, you know, he's talking to us, where he's alive, this and that, he lives, right? And essentially, he's going to undergo this process. Before we do that, there's a certain stages he must go through, the four-stage process. And he's going through this four-stage process now. And essentially, to them, because what's really happening is essentially live again. But reality is, the king is not dead, right? So, and that's why the title of my book was The King Is Not Dead. So what's actually happening is, well, his mouth is open. And that really is, it's so powerful on so many levels. And guys who are really, really in depth, they're like, that's a problem. They're going to say, yo, this guy's a problem. This guy, he knows. And again, you know, this is really what it is. And that's really the secret of all secrets. Essentially, that's what they said they was doing. You know, and that really is the secret of all secrets. You know, there's so many levels to it, though.
Wow. Okay, so that's good. So another point that I really liked was the concept of the king having to realize that death was, I think the example you gave was fertilization of the sperm and the egg, and how nature can actually create life from death, but used to the concept that life is required to create life, but he had to learn that sometimes death is actually what's needed to create life. Talk about that, because I think that's really philosophical. That's deep.
Right. So again, the concept really of the whole book for me, again, is this plant. And we talk about the wisir plant. Uh-huh. And that's what you see above on top of his head. It's this wisir plant. And it's this concept of the plant. So essentially, again, sperm, the sperm creates life. Yeah. But only a living sperm and a living egg can produce life. Uh-huh. And essentially, but with the plant kingdom, what's actually happening is, based on the fertile soil, it's the dead organisms and that makes that soil fertile. So essentially, in essence, then it's the death and this death indicator that's actually producing new life. So this is the concept. And that's one of my favorite scenes, when he sits him down in the room, the laboratory, shows him the plant and says, well, what do you see when you look at this plant? And he goes, oh, that's our nation's plant. And then he's going, you know, it's powerful stuff, but really that's really what it is. It's this plant essentially, from death, we produce new life, you see.
I think that's what I got. That's one thing that I got from the book that I resonated with strongly, was the concept of death not being something that, you know, it's not the end of life. It's actually the beginning of life. You look at it from that perspective, right?
right.
Death actually spawns more life than you know, which is contrary to what we're taught today in our society. So, yeah, I like that. You also talked about crystals, and you talked about using sort of crystals to store information, to store intelligence. I like that idea. Go into that.
So, yeah. So again, and it's something that they're doing right now. So really in the book, we talk about how, okay, storage, that's one of the issues for us right now. Uh-huh. You know, storage, how do we store data for a long period of time? And again, one way would be stored data is, again, essentially in stone. And now people think, well, stone, why is that? That's actually a form of data storage, because the stone doesn't erode, it doesn't decay. So you could, a person could write a message in stone, and that's here for thousands of years. And we've seen that. We're living that. We're seeing that. But we're not really taught that, well, this is data, and this is actually data storage. So one of the issues that in our society is essentially data storage, and then, you know, data's growing, everyone's got smartphones, the data's growing, storage is also, you know, so storage is an issue. So in the book, I'm really pondering ways in which storing data for a long period of time, how can that be done? And it's something that they want to explore right now, where you probably look it up, where they got these sheets of glass and they're storing data on these sheets of glass. And right now, it was Microsoft, I think, that pioneered this right now. And Disney are using this to store these old films from 1970s, 1980s. They're storing this on the sheets of glass. So this is stuff that they're looking into right now. Again, data is a problem, data storage. So that was something that I wanted just to tap into. Well, how is there ways we can store data for a long period of time? Wow. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So this might be a bit unrelated, but what are your thoughts on, you know, I feel like we've sort of been enamored by the idea of like diamonds and crystals and like, you know, the amethyst and all that.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think that that comes from the fact that, you know, we know that there's some intrinsic value to these crystals, despite the fact that we just use them for decorations and for jewelry and stuff? There's something deeper about them that we get to understand, at least in our current society.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, crystals, again, you know, we do a lot of diamonds. Diamonds are plentiful, but essentially crystal, essentially, it's really, for me, it's a psycho-spiritual aspect that really deals with them and essentially what they really do. Essentially, it's really a mental thing, you know, and essentially you can actually, you know, in some cases, you can actually use them for healing, but not really in a sense of, oh, it actually has powers, but it's the way it captures our imagination and captures an aspect of our minds. And that's what makes them so powerful. Just looking at it and just, you know, it just captures a part of our mind. And that's really where this psycho spiritual thing comes in. So they're really powerful, you know, psycho spiritual things. Yeah.
Great, great, great. Yeah, So we don't have much time left. So the last question for you I have is, can you just give the audience a brief summary of the book? Not the whole book, but just a brief summary of the book to tell them what to look for when they read the book.
So essentially what the book is, again, you know, it started with an idea, and the idea was the secret of all secrets. Mm-hmm. And rather than just come through with a video, okay, this is the secret of all secrets, this comes from this. I said, let's take an entire story now and build it around this concept of the secret of all secrets. So when you read this book, essentially what you're getting is, on one level, a good story, but then on another level, it's a concept that has yet to be explored by a mainstream. It's a concept that essentially is shunned or not really talked about, the possibility of, well, if we take a look at this being said, and you know, and there's one scene, and I wouldn't want to mention this, there's one aspect in my book, mm-hmm. right? I shouldn't really mention it, but there's one piece in my book which is literally inspired heavily by a piece of text. And when I read that, when I first announced the book, I thought there was going to be people that had read the text and they could say, oh my God, that's that. Because when I read the text, I'm like, but this don't make no sense. How is it that they're saying this, but yet people have thought all this other stuff for all these years? So there's a piece of text in my book that's not verbatim, but literally heavily inspired. And it's like, this is what they said. And I mean, all I've done really is put the knowledge to it. You know, so again, I don't want to go too much into it, but secret of all secrets, man, this is what the book's about. And it's, you know, it's profound stuff. So yeah, man, it's out now on Amazon. You guys can get it. So yeah.
Absolutely, guys. Please get the book, Long Live the King. I have to commend you, brother. Great work, man. I'm very impressed. This is a mixture of, you know, nonfiction, fiction, philosophy, you know, just it's a perfect amalgamation of all the things that, you know, keeps our society moving forward. So I'm happy for you and I'm looking forward to your success. Thank you.
Yeah, I appreciate it, bro. You know, I appreciate, you know, much respect, bro. 100% appreciate it.
Absolutely. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to